This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kate Murray, joined here in the studio by Shaka Hislop. And with us today, we also have Craig Burley and some fine Frenchmen too in Frank Leboeuf and Jules Laron. And we will be talking about those rumours of Antonio Conte going to Tottenham Hotspur. We'll start with you, Jules. Any new developments since yesterday on this news?
Well, talks have continued today, Kay, between Daniel Levy, Antonio Conte, his agent, everybody involved, and they're progressing well. I think they're getting closer to finding an agreement on the length of the contract, the wages, the staff, etc. All the details that you have to sort out before announcing a manager, but it looks that it's getting closer and closer now for Antonio Conte to become the new Tottenham manager.
We're just going to flag up something that the man at the top, Daniel Levy, did say last month in the search for a manager. He said, we need to select someone whose values reflect those of our great club and return to playing football with the style for which we are known, free-flowing, attacking and entertaining, whilst continuing to embrace our desire to see young players flourish from our academy alongside experienced talent. Craig, it would be great to get your thoughts on whether you think Conte is the right fit here for a club like Spurs.
I think this is a marriage made in hell. I really do. And I tell you why. Not because Antonio Conte's not a very, very good coach, because he is, but he is one of the most demanding, impatient managers in European football at the moment. He's successful, but he kicks and screams and he has public outbursts and he is super high maintenance. And when he doesn't think that he's getting what he wants, then it's a boxing match. I mean, probably even more so than Jose Mourinho. So unless Spurs are going to do a full 360 and start becoming this big spending Tottenham, I don't see how this marriage, if it happens, is going to last, because, you know, that squad needs an overhaul if it's going to compete with the real big boys in England, never mind Europe. And that's going to take a lot of money. On top of that, you've got the Harry Kane scenario. So I can understand Tottenham going for him. But I don't understand from Conte's perspective what he thinks he's going to get once he gets his feet in the door, if he signs as manager. Because I just see frustration after frustration after frustration. And I don't know what the boys think, but I just don't see this working.
Well, Frank's nodding away. Why are you nodding, Frank?
Because, I mean, the choice of Conte simply doesn't match with Mr. Levy comments. He wants to use the academy to make that club better. Where, remember why Conte wanted to leave Inter Milan? Because he didn't have the money to buy players. He likes to buy players, talented players, experienced players, and he doesn't give a stuff about young players in the academy. It's not his thought. His thought is to win the Premier League if he signed for Tottenham, or maybe the Champions League after, if they qualify. He doesn't care about a long-term project. He wants big money. He wants big players, which is not the case for Tottenham. They don't have the money. Kane wants to leave. So if Kane stays, how are they going to get the money to buy other players? It makes simply no sense whatsoever to go for Conte, for Spurs.
Shaka, can you see any reason why Antonio Conte would want to take the Spurs job?
Well, because he's offered a job right now, and Spurs are a big club and have money to spend. But I'm with Frank and Craig on this. When this rumour first kind of erupted, my opinion was Antonio Conte is the perfect manager for Spurs. You just don't see it happening. He's exactly what Spurs want in terms of his winning mentality, that kind of aggressive pursuit of it, is what Spurs have been lacking for so long. But just in terms of Daniel Levy himself and how he seems to align or prefer managers who sing from the same kind of team hymn sheet and don't really challenge him that much, Antonio Conte is not that. He will call Levy out if he feels that he isn't supported. At the same time, Conte is not, to Levy's statement, he is not the manager who brings young players through. He will spend a lot in pursuit of winning. And the teams that he put together, while very winning teams, are counter-attacking teams. And if you're talking about Spurs traditionally, as good as Spurs have been on the counter-attack, I don't think anybody describes Spurs as purely a counter-attacking team. So just from in terms of the old kind of footballing philosophy, again, it doesn't line up with Daniel Levy, his statement, or who Antonio Conte has shown himself to be. While I say that kind of mentality is exactly what Spurs want, this very well may be a marriage made in hell, as Craig put it.
If Conte does go there, Jules, does that mean that Harry Kane's sticking around?
I think that would be the first job that Conte has to do, is try to convince him to stay. We've heard Conte in the past saying how Kane was the best striker in the world and that he would love to work with him. Well, this could be his chance. And if he can find a word of keeping him, then I think that would be already a big win for Conte and for Spurs, because right now Kane wants out. And only, as we've said before on the show, only a new manager finding the right words can keep him at the club, maybe for one season, maybe two seasons, maybe just to see what happens in the next 12 months, for example. But certainly, I think this is a squad that Conte can improve. He can improve them individually. He can improve them collectively as well. They can play the 3-5-2 formation that is currently his favourite, like he played at Inter, for example. He can make them very solid. He'll have to take underdogs. When he got to Chelsea, they finished 10th under Mourinho the season before. They won the league the year after. Look where he took Italy to the Euros. They were not... No one expected them to do as well as they did, but he took that team, created a team spirit. They were very solid. They put them exactly like he wanted them to be at his image, and then they were successful. So I think he can work with them, but I agree with the boys. It still looks that it doesn't make much sense, though.
Yeah, well, one place where there isn't going to be a new coach coming in is Barcelona, although there's been a bit of a U-turn, because you may remember that on Friday, Barcelona president Joan Laporta said this on Ronald Koeman's future. He said he has a contract in place, but I don't believe in transitional seasons. We'll continue to speak to him and make further decisions next week. You have to understand that he was a coach that was already in place with a year on his deal when we took over in March. Ronald will be the first to know our decision. Well, it's been confirmed by the president that he will be sticking around. But before that, you will remember that Ronald Koeman's agency tweeted this out. I want to marry you, but I have doubts. Give me 2 weeks to find a better partner. If I can't find the right person, we'll get married anyway. Now, that was quickly deleted, and things have got a lot better since then. It does look as though they will be sticking around with that original partner, because it's been confirmed that he's down to at least have another year, Jules. So what have you made of this situation? Does he deserve another year?
Personally, I don't think he deserves another year. I think this is a choice by default, because, like the agent put it rightly, they didn't find anyone in the last 2 weeks to get married. So they stick with the old bird, really, and they're going to keep Koeman for another year. And I don't think, despite seeing an improvement at times at the turn of the year when they moved to a different formation, that 3-5-2 or the 3-4-3 that worked in certain games, however, towards the end of the season, when they could still win La Liga, we saw all the limits and the flaws in Ronald Koeman as a manager, in his own management as well of this team. And I was very disappointed. I really believed that he would be there next season, because they could not find someone better for various reasons. But he's there by default, for sure.
Deleted tweets have been the theme of this week, because look at this. We also have Aguero's brother, Sergio Aguero's brother, Mauricio del Castillo. He tweeted, since Guardiola arrived at City, he never liked my brother. Aguero's dad also chimed in as well. He said, no, I don't believe Guardiola's tears about him leaving. For me, he never wanted Cohen. He always wants to be the main man of his teams and not the players. He said that he is irreplaceable and he does not have him in the squad. He was waiting until the last moment to renew his City, but it could not be. They did not want him. Craig, what do you make of this?
I think this is pretty pathetic, actually, if I'm being quite frank with you. Aguero had his issues this season with both injuries and COVID. It was a difficult season, and City decided to go another way to try and compensate for that. And in general, it was very successful up until the the Champions League final, playing without a striker. Look, City want to move. At Aguero's age, City want to move on and try for a younger striker. There's no doubt about that. The other side of the coin is this: Pep doesn't want me, or Pep never wanted me scenario from the family. It's just nonsense, because look over the piece of Guardiola's tenure there. When Aguero was fit, he was still the main man. He was still the guy that they would go to, along with De Bruyne and others, to get the job done. It was only latterly that he didn't get much playing time, and that was because he was out the side for so long that City found domestically a very successful way of getting the job done. So, yeah, this is disappointing to see from a player and a player's representatives and family who had such a great time at Man City to start throwing it all back on the coach at this point, when clearly the coach, Guardiola, was playing him almost all the time up until this season when he wasn't fit.
Obviously, the family upset from what we've seen, Frank, with these tweets, albeit some of them being deleted. But do you think that that shows and is a reflection of how Sergio Aguero felt about this situation?
You know, I think, as Craig said, you know, I think it's when you leave a team and you leave a club like Aguero did, just did, with such a resume, a fantastic resume, I think the representative or the family shouldn't talk like that. I mean, it makes no sense, again, because Aguero is not or hasn't been the player he's been, you know, lately. And I want to believe that Pep Guardiola is not a better actor than I am, because I saw him crying talking about Aguero at the end of the game when he was talking about him. And I really believe that he had Aguero in his heart and felt that he really liked him. Which is not the comment that has been showed to from the family. So it's sad for me. It's sad to have an ending like that, and it shouldn't be like that. I mean, Aguero has been a fantastic player for Manchester City under Guardiola's orders, and even if he's not the perfect love, sometimes it's good to keep some stuff hidden. It's better.
Jules, is it more a case of it coming to a natural end then, and Sergio Aguero obviously not getting any younger?
Yeah, I think there's that. I just think that Aguero will be added to the list of those strikers who had issues with Pep, whether that's Samuel Eto'o, whether that's Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and Aguero might feel similar, and maybe there were tensions between them through those years, but Aguero has been maybe Manchester City's greatest player, or one of the greatest players for sure, and he kept scoring when Pep arrived in the last 5 years, has been scoring a lot. And I think I agree with the boys. I think it's a bit sad to almost tarnish your own son or brother legacy at the club by having those comments on the manager who's given still a lot of game time and a lot of goals in the last 5 years.
Now, these are the kind of topics you can catch on the Gab and Jules podcast. It's released twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. All the talk in European football. Make sure to download it wherever you do get your pods. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. N'Golo Kanté for Ballon d'Or. Many are calling for it, including our very own Julien Laurent. In fact, he's written an article on it. So we know his stance on the player and who he thinks should win it. These are the odds. Kylian Mbappe at the top of the list there. N'Golo Kanté, 5-1. Robert Lewandowski, you'd expect to see him there. Obviously, Messi and Ronaldo, their names will always come up in a competition like the Ballon d'Or is. And the usual suspects of what we've seen. Ruben Diaz, an outside bet there for many. Some were calling for him to win it. But Frank, I would like to know if you would back your fellow Frenchman on this one. What do you think of the fact that Jules has written an article saying that Conte should win it?
I love Jules. Because, well, you know how much I don't respect the Ballon d'Or. I don't care because it's, again, an individual award for in a collective sport. So for me, it doesn't make any sense. But I will have a little bit of respect if, for once, you know, we don't give it to a forward player. I don't even know why Messi and Ronaldo are there, because supposedly for me, you have to win something to be in the list. When I see Mbappe being in the first spot from maybe the bookies or the odds, when he only won the French Cup, I don't get it. Lewandowski is there because he scored so many goals, and last year he couldn't get it because of the COVID, so we want to give it to him again. But I'm sorry, man of the match in the semi-final first leg of the Champions League, man of the match in the second leg of the Champions League, man of the match of the final of the Champions League, one name, N'Golo Kanté. So I agree with Jules. Well done, Jules. I was going to read the article. You got for me.
I think that Shaq is also in agreement with you too, as well.
Absolutely. I think N'Golo Kanté. I said a few days ago that as long as France get to the semi-final, I think anything less than a semi-final for this French squad is an abject failure in the Euros. As long as France doesn't suffer an abject failure in this tournament, and N'Golo Kanté plays any part in France's successes. And to Frank's point, you kind of sympathise with Lewandowski. Last season, I thought he definitely would have won it, but for COVID. This season breaks Müller's record. But now all of a sudden you come up against a player who has redefined the position that he plays in N'Golo Kanté. Not only redefining it, showing how important it is two teams as they started to build in trying to dominate European football. N'Golo Kanté is head and shoulders above anybody in his position, and for me, been head and shoulders above anybody on the football field this year.
But we made sure Craig Burley was on today's show because we know how much he loves the Ballon d'Or. What are your thoughts on this one, Craig?
My thoughts are I couldn't give a toss about this competition. That's my thoughts. I don't have an issue with If N'Golo Kanté won it, or Robert Lewandowski, as Shaq mentioned, with another record, but spare me Kylian Mbappe at the top of the list, please. So, I'm a hard-working, grafting, energetic, clever midfielder who has come from the lower tiers of French football to win Premier League titles with Leicester and be successful with Chelsea and be the driving force. Why not? Why not? What a shot in the arm that would be for guys who don't quite come through at 16, 17 and play and be the next wonder kid on the block. It's taken him a long time. He's worked very hard for it. And he's very, as we know, downbeat. He drives an unflashy car. He's low-key, doesn't shout from the rooftops, and he's got many things to be admired. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind him winning the competition if indeed, like any of us, we really gave a toss about this competition.
Well, one Frenchman who's really rubbed Craig up the wrong way is Kylian Mbappe. Craig was on the call for France's 3-0 win over Wales for ESPN. And here is a little taste of Craig's distaste for what he saw.
Oh, get up. Get up. He's got a bad habit of that, him, you know. Keep your eye on him. Look, Mr. Innocent, Kylian Mbappe. Watch this. Watch. Cheat. Absolute cheat. Watch this. Look at him. Embarrassing. When a player of his talent throwing himself over like that. The referee was spot on. Should have given him a yellow card. Give him a yellow for nonsense like that. If you're going to send young boys off like Nico Williams for and a friend like that, yellow card him for diving. Let's put a stop to it before these Euros start. Sorry, rant over.
Tell you what, Craig, tell us how you really feel, eh?
Well, there'll be a lot of people probably upset because people sometimes don't like to hear the truth. And look, I'm a big fan of Kylian Mbappe. I was really intrigued by what the French would do, albeit it was a friendly and you know, Didier Deschamps, that's going to be close. Well, Jules will know better than me, but I think that's going to be close to his starting 11. come the opening game. So what I wanted to do was watch the movement of Mbappe, of Benzema, and of Griezmann. But what really got my goat there was, and look, and I think it's factually correct, and he's not the only one, but he's very high profile, and it's becoming a bit of a trait for Kylian Mbappe, this. And here we have a friendly against little old Wales. We have the world champions, the favourites for the Euros. They're playing a friendly at home in Nice against little old Wales. They're down to 10 men, and yet one of the best players in the world sees fit and thinks it's right that he can still throw himself to the ground. And I mean throw himself. There was not even an inclination of a challenge from the defender. And so I think, you know, he has to be careful, because come the Euros, these kind of things will be watched closely with the VAR. And France can, you know, do without losing a guy for ill discipline. So I think it was frustrating to see. As you can see there was no attempt whatsoever at a challenge. There was no contact whatsoever.
Craig.
Yeah?
Craig, you know where he plays. You know, he plays for Paris Saint-Germain. And you know who he plays with. So he has a fantastic model. So you know what? The other one is a star. He does like 10 times that Mbappe does, you know?
Yeah. And it's rubbing. I think there are some bad habits coming in there. And all I'm saying is you have to watch out for these things in the Euros, because he'll be yellow carded for stuff like that. That can lead to disciplinary issues. That can lead to suspension from matches. And these things will and should be picked up on in the Euros. In terms of the game itself, just to sort of diverse from that rant, was the great story about Benzema coming back in was a big surprise to everybody. And I know Jill sort of broke the story. And we never saw it happening. But I think when you see a guy playing the way he's played in the last few years, it's so frustrating to see that talent not been utilised at major championships, even though France have been successful. But if you wondered what he's going to bring to this French side, we got a little taste of it, a small taste of it yesterday, albeit against a weaker side in Wales. But the link-up play at times and the movement of Benzema and his ability to bring other people into the game, as well as score goals, was really fun to watch yesterday. And I think Griezmann and Mbappe are going to have a real good time playing with this guy, because not only does he bring a natural goal scorer again, like Giroud has been for France, but you know, Benzema's more natural, he's better. He also brings his link-up play and his movement, and I think that is a huge plus for France.
Yeah, I'll tell you who's not going to have a good time. Any opposition defence coming up against that forward line, that's going to be worth seeing. Anyway, we've seen some notable friendly action. You always know that the Euros is upon us, or any major tournament, when the friendlies all kick into play. And these are the results. Belgium with a 1-1 draw with Greece. Ukraine 1-0 over Northern Ireland. Switzerland 7-0 against Liechtenstein. And Turkey, who kick off Euro 2020 with a 2-0 win over Moldova. So let's talk about Belgium then, shall we? Because obviously, with the players that they've got, they show so much promise. Is this the time now, Craig, that they can live up to that promise finally?
Well, not if the French, in my opinion, have a really good tournament. They're the strongest, and there'll be others. But listen, their objective, Belgium, should be to win it, right? Time is running out for this. It's been called the golden generation. Call it what you want. They've had a conveyor belt of really good players. And one of the reasons they brought Roberto Martinez in was not to get to semi-finals, because quite a few teams do that, like England did at the World Cup, was to win a major competition. And one of the reasons they imploded embarrassingly in France in 2016 is because they had a coach without any real resume in Mark Wilmots, and they were embarrassed by Wales. And so Martinez brings a great deal of experience in. He brings the semi-final from the World Cup in. But it really is time for them to start to win these tournaments. Otherwise, they'll be looking at the next batch of players coming through and hoping they're going to be able to supersede this lot. They're not getting any younger. De Bruyne has got an injury. Hazard's form has been poor. Some of the defenders are a lot older. The plus side is Romelu Lukaku's had a great season. But now's the time for Belgium to go and do it, because as these players get older, it's going to become more difficult.
Is Belgium a team that France should fear as one of their main challenges, Jules?
Yeah, I think for sure. We saw that semi-final at the World Cup in 2018 when there was not much between the two teams, and I think eventually France won it because they were more solid and certainly more efficient on that goal by Umtiti. But this is now or never, really, because then it would be too late, because I'm not sure how long Roberto Martinez will stick in that with that team anyway. And then for Kevin De Bruyne and Romelu Lukaku, they won't be able to do it on their own for much longer either. So this is the time for them, and they have to make all the disappointment count from years before, so they've learned from the disappointments and be stronger and better this time round, because again, I think this is now or never for them.
A very interesting friendly to cast our eyes over tomorrow will be Spain and Portugal. And you can catch that game, Spain against Portugal, on ESPN. It kicks off, or our coverage kicks off, at 1:25 p.m. Eastern. Be sure not to miss that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are stepping way back in time to 1984 with a look at the bracket for the Euros back then, and it's France and Spain who progressed to the final, with France winning it 2-0 in the grand event. There's an article coming out on the website ESPN.com where our journalists have been picking their most memorable moments of the Euros. Joining us now, we have two fine Frenchmen, Franck Leboeuf and Julien Laurent. And Julien has picked 1984, although I don't really think, Julien, that you would have been so old at this time, if here at all.
You're right. I was three when the Euros happened, but it's one of those tournaments that your father and your grandfather tell you all about when you're growing up, and you watch the old VHS to see what masterclass Michel Platini put in 1984. I don't think many players owned a big tournament like Platini did in 84, Maradona in 86, of course, maybe Brazilian Ronaldo in 02, maybe Pelé as well in 58. But it's not often that you see such a player putting such a masterclass from start to finish. 9 goals in 5 games, the hat-trick against Yugoslavia, and that very, very iconic, epic goal in extra time against Portugal in the semi-final in Marseille, in a Stade Vélodrome on fire, after a great run by Jean Tiganan and a lovely finish by Platini. It was just his competition. He was not injured, unlike in 82 or 86, and he just spread all his class over that World Cup, that Euro, sorry.
Frank, how old were you when this Euro happened?
I was just above 16, and I have to say that I'm very shameful, because my father went to the game, the semi-final in Portugal, and offered me to get a seat next to him, but it was, I think, on a Saturday or some days like that, and I had a dance party in the afternoon with some girls, so I'd rather go there, which is completely shameful, because I missed maybe one of the biggest games ever. And that action with Tigana and the goal from Platini, I mean, the stadium almost collapsed, said my father.
The greatest French player of all time for you, no, Frank. I hope it was worth it, this girl.
I don't even remember. I more remember the goal than the girl, I have to say. Well, I think it's better to talk about Michel Platini. Do you know that it's the first time that he played in 78, 82 and 86 World Cup, and always been injured in those competitions. But the only time that he was really fit at his prime was that competition, and we saw the result, because you show the 3 goals that he scored against, the hat-trick that he scored against Yugoslavia. Left foot, header, right foot. I think he did the same against Belgium when the French won 5-0. Again, a header, left foot and right foot. He was absolutely perfect. Now we talk about Ronaldo, Messi, Mbappe nowadays, But Platini in 84 was the man.
And was that the team then too, that everything it has to be judged off, Julian, when it comes to French teams that have gone by? Because there have been a lot of successes in years that have passed, but you've gone way back to 1984 here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, collectively, certainly, this was maybe the greatest ever French team that we've had, even more than the 98 team and 2000 that Franck played in. That was brilliant, but maybe not with the collective strength and certainly the creativity that this team in the 80s had, because they had the famous Carré Magique, you know, the magical quatuor, really, with Tigana, Fernandez, Platini and Gires, and Gengini to a certain extent, but certainly the first four that I mentioned. In terms of creativity, complementing each other, this was as good as a midfielder that you could ever find, and certainly in French football history, this is maybe the best midfield we've ever had.
Frank, would you agree with that?
I completely agree with that, and I talked about it with Michel Platini, and that's true. They were the best team we ever had. They didn't have the experience. Remember that only Platini played abroad. And Didier Six at some point went to play to England, but otherwise they were all playing in France, so didn't get the European experience to do better, or world experience, which was the case in 88. And you know, when I see Tigana, because we talked about Platini, when I see Tigana, is the grandfather, I would say, with all due respect, to Kanté. We had between the two of them, we had Makelele. We had a little bit of Lassana Jara, but it's a real heritage. Tigana is the first one who brought those kind of and those type of players that we cheer the most, I would say, in France.
And how do you remember the goal in the final then?
Well, that one was a lucky one. We call it an Arconada because the goalkeeper's name was Arconada, and it's more his fault than a feat from Michel Platini. But the second goal from Bruno Bellon was just a beauty and gave us a freedom, like we realized that finally France will win something in a big event. So that was fantastic.
Confident this time around then, Julien, after what happened in Euro 2016. Sorry to bring it up, but obviously things have gone a lot better for France since then.
Yes, you're right. I mean, I think they were really unlucky to lose that final against 2016 in Portugal on home soil, like in 1984. But after that, 2018, of course, in Russia, the triumph in that World Cup, and then to that World Cup winning squad, if you add Karim Benzema now, plus the 3 years of experience that Kylian Mbappe, for example, got, that N'Golo Kanté got, that Paul Pogba got, that team is much better already than the one that we saw at the World Cup in Russia. So it looks on paper, at least, like we've got a great chance in the Euros, and this is certainly a team that is very confident, that know exactly their strength and their weaknesses, and that Didier Deschamps has been building up for 3 years now, and I think it'd be very disappointing if they don't go at least in the semi-final.
You'll be able to see that stacked French side this summer on ESPN and ABC. Euro 2020 coming to your screens from June the 11th. Turkey, Italy gets things underway. We'll have extensive coverage, preview shows, reaction, digital shows too, and of course, all of the games live. Be sure to check out our ESPN FC YouTube page for daily content, reaction, and much more. Subscribe to never miss a moment. Okay, Stevie had to be here. I have had to return for the most pivotal and important moment of the season. It is Xhaka's final power rankings. It doesn't matter that I missed the end of the European football season. I wanted to be back for this one. Stevie too. So Xhaka, talk us through them.
Well, as you say, Kay, the entire season's come down to this. The one that everybody was looking for. Chelsea top of the tree. You don't need me to explain that. City drop one after losing the Champions League final. Bayern, Inter, Atleti all winning their domestic leagues, as did Lille. Villarreal, European League champions. Dortmund are in after a strong finish, winning their last eight. Ajax are in after pressure from our Dutch producer. And PSG stay at 10th after pressure from Frank Leboeuf.
Right.
There can be little arguing with that.
I think there'll be arguments.
Hold on a second. There can be little arguing.
Yes.
You've got two teams in there, right? Dortmund and PSG, who won a domestic trophy. They won a cup. Ooh, boo-hoo, big time. What about Glasgow Rangers? won the Scottish Premiership and never lost a game all season, and they can't get in the top 10. Are you serious, Xhaka?
They're 11th. They're 11th, Stevie, but we only have space for 10.
But it's a top 10.
Yeah.
11th's no good, Jack.
I'm sorry about that. They're 11th.
How can you put Dortmund in because they won? They won the what was it, the poker? The poker.com, what is the name of it?
The Pokal.
Yeah, me Pokal. Hey. They won the last eight in the Bundesliga in all competitions, including the cup. So I had to give them some love there, Stevie.
Oh, they won the last eight. Rangers went the whole season without losing a game. A little better than, the last eight. Wow, we big time.
Yeah, but...
Who else was a near miss?
Sporting Lisbon, near miss. West Ham.
There's two La Liga teams in there, neither Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Yeah.
How close were they?
Not very close. I don't know what you want me to say. I can't even make an argument for Real Madrid that they won a domestic cup.
No, they went to the final day.
Well, you got Dortmund then, and they won a domestic cup.
That's what I'm saying.
Real Madrid was second.
Now, for
they
me, the question.
That's what I'm saying.
For me, the question.
There seems a lot of rationale in this sort of list, Xhaka.
I'm saying to Kay that I couldn't put Real Madrid in because I can't even make the argument, as I did with Dortmund, that they won a domestic cup. Real Madrid didn't win anything. That's what I'm saying to Kay.
So where's Barcelona?
So they're 12th. The 12th after Rangers.
Frank was a little bit upset that Lille were ahead of Villarreal, I think. Is that right, Frank?
Yeah, the thing is, the question for me is, do you think it's more important, Xhaka, to win a domestic trophy as the Bundesliga, the Serie A, the Liga, or the Ligue 1, than to win the Europa League? I don't know, especially from a club like Villarreal. You think Villarreal will need more credit than any other club who, won the league, their own leagues, but didn't win the European Cup? And again, well, you stole my thunder a little bit with Sporting Lisbon, but I think it's after like 20 years or I don't know how many years they didn't win. The last time they won, it was with Ronaldo. I think it would have been nice to see them in the first 10 instead of maybe Paris Saint-Germain.
You just hate Paris Saint-Germain. You just hate Paris Saint-Germain.
Hey, Xhaka.
No.
What?
If Pochettino's still at PSG next year, right, and they don't win the league and they win two domestic cups again, do you think he's still going to be there? Not a chance.
We've got it.
He's going to get sacked.
He's going to go on forever. Because I know what you lot are like. So you know what? We're going to end it there.
I don't know. What does that have to do with anything?
Because there'll be more shenanigans.
Yeah, do Shaq a favour.
More shenanigans in extra time. Craig's going to join us as well, so it should be a lot of fun.
Craig would have loved the power racket.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Stick around. Extra time is next. The whole crew are here, so make sure you join us. Welcome into Extra Time. We have a full house for you today. Kay Murray and Cheka Hislop in the studio. And joining us, we have Stevie Nicol, Frank LaBeouf and Craig Burley. Stevie, we're going to start with you. It's a question from Navin, who says, why is Stevie so salty about Conte making Spurs top four contenders next season? Their current squad isn't that bad. Look at what he did with Victor Moses.
Why am I so sulky? I just don't think Conte is going to go to a team that isn't going to turn around, or the owner or whoever's in charge, and say, right, here's a pot of money, go and get who you want. As far as Tottenham's squad, Tottenham need a complete rehaul, if you ask me. An overhaul, I beg your pardon. I mean, their back line in particular needs completely replacing. No question. And actually, the fact that Harry Kane wants away tells you that he doesn't think that the squad they've got is going to be anytime soon challenging for anything. So it's not just me. If Harry Kane doesn't fancy Spurs, then I'm going to go with Harry Kane.
They weren't that far off last season, Stevie.
Stevie, we just had a...
Oh, you were listening to Gab.
Stevie, you'll not be aware of this, but we actually just, Frank and I, along with Jules and Shaka, just had a conversation on the show about Conte going to Tottenham, and I described it as a marriage made in hell, because here we have a manager who fights and kicks and screams when he doesn't get what he wants, and all of a sudden people think Tottenham are going to be this big open checkbook club. I mean, it just doesn't make sense, does it? I mean, yeah, it might make them a little bit better, but
I'm 100% with you, Craig. And as I said, I mean, I might have been trying to be clever, but at the end of the day, if, you know, you said, Kay, that, well, they weren't that far away, the proof of the pudding is that Harry Kane, and he's right in the middle of it, he's with them every day, he knows exactly what's in the team, who's in the squad, and he wants away. That tells you that, number one, what's there isn't good enough, and two, he doesn't think they're going to be bringing in enough good recruits to make them that much better. So,
hold on,
Harry Kane's your man to go by.
What's this? They almost made it last year. They were 5 points off the top four. Antonio Conte does not go into clubs to just try and clamber into the top four. He goes to clubs like Juventus, like Chelsea, and Inter Milan to fight and kick and scream, to demand that they are getting the tools to be fighting for the title. No manager is going to take this current Spurs squad, I believe, over 38 games past Liverpool and Manchester City. So if you're saying Antonio Conte might come in and get them in the top four, I would say maybe. But Antonio Conte, is that why he would want to go to a club? No, not at all. He wants to compete for titles. So this is all pie in the sky.
I'd say it's a very salty pie, though. A highly salted one. It does sound like that to me.
We're all salty. We're all salty when we don't tell people what they want to hear. Because people just want us to go, oh, yeah, isn't this wonderful? Daniel Levy, he's going to give him $400 million to spend, and we're going to win the league. My God.
Yeah, dream on.
Yeah, definitely high salt content there. Cheka, yeah. Which club is more attractive for a manager? No bias here. Everton or West Ham?
You can't give me that no bias caveat all of a sudden. I am going to go with all my bias. West Ham, with all my bias, Keith.
That's definitely the bias.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stevie, would you disagree there?
Oh, hold on a second. Let me guess. Hold on. So, West Ham are playing in a stadium that doesn't belong to them. It's a big bit, and it's big and it's open. Whereas Everton, on the other hand, I've got an owner who is building a new stadium and who's backing the team to the tunes of hundreds of millions and will continue to do so. Let me guess, will I go to West Ham or will I go to Everton? Can you get back to me? I'm not quite sure.
And Stevie, can you get back to me on whether you think Stevie Gerrard should take the Everton job?
Ooh. I don't see why he shouldn't take it. Just because of his connection with Liverpool doesn't mean he can't be the manager of Everton. Now, whether he's ready for it yet, I don't know. But I would have no problem with Steven Gerrard taking the Everton job. Put it that way.
Okay. We'll move on then. We've got Deb says for Craig and Frank, and we'll start with you, Frank. Do you think Tuchel would switch to a back four next season? What is better, a back three or a four? With a back three, is the creativity of an extra attacking player get sacrificed?
No, I don't think so. I think he proved today with the back three that it completely worked. As long as James and Chilwell going to be on the in the midfield, you know, bringing the defensively and especially offensively as well. So you don't sacrifice anything. And it worked mostly during the season. But we all know that you have to be strong at the back in order to bring something also offensively. So I don't think Tuchel is gonna change anything. He found the recipe of a success in the biggest competition. So why would he change?
Craig, three or a four?
I think it comes down to personnel, and you know, within that personnel that he's got, that's what he felt. And I mean, don't forget, he did it straight away when he came in, and he stuck with it almost all the way through. So he knew what he wanted. He thought that worked with the personnel he had the best. And so, unless they go out and you know, buy a couple of new defenders in the summer, which seems unlikely, then I don't think he would change. But you know, both. People get, you know, their knickers in a twist about formations. You know, certain both formations have advantages and disadvantages. It all boils down, most of the time, to the personnel within those structures.
All right, let's talk preparation then. Frank Leboeuf. Oh, Frank in here, an extra time. Well, we'll ask you then. In preparation for major international tournaments, what were your typical training schedules like? How
beer.
Often did you train? And did you spend a lot of time learning about the opposition? Yeah.
No, ask him a proper question. When was his last night out before a game? That's a better question. Was it 2 days or 3 days?
Or why he missed that 1984 game?
Don't bring up 84.
Frank, tell us.
According to Craig, the best preparation is to drink beer. I would say that... I don't know. I think it depends where you are. You know, somebody like Kante just need a rest, where somebody like Giroud, we need to many training sessions to find the same level. So it's the first 2 weeks is like very individual. Then they're going to work. They're going to work tactically, of course, as well, because it's the first time maybe they have a time to work a little bit tactically. But there's not much to say. You have a personal preparation, individual preparation, and you try to find the best rhythm altogether. Maybe the last 2 weeks. That's the only thing I can say about it.
I heard for Stevie it was ice baths and cleanses.
Right, ice bath.
The only thing that was in the ice was his beer. Trust me.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only thing.
Listen, how many World Cup winners are on the panel?
Beer.
Yeah,
the two
but listen,
B's. Beers,
Frank,
beer and bruises. Listen, that's the only thing Frank, ice is good for.
If Frank was Scottish, he wouldn't have been winning a World Cup. Trust me. Listen.
he wouldn't have been
lucky. bleeding lucky, he's French. What I was going to say is, I tell you what, before we played at the World Cup in 98, we came here to the States to prepare, inverted commas, and Rod Stewart came to train with us, and then we went to a Rod Stewart concert at Madison Square Garden in New York that evening, and then the manager said, you can have a night out. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? A night out in New York with 20 odd lads. Brilliant.
I'm sure there are some more stories there, but
I couldn't remember where a hotel was. I said to the taxi driver, he said, where's the hotel? I said, New Jersey. He said, you have to give me a bigger clue than that. I said, I don't know. In New Jersey.
Yeah, so the moral of the story is, you know the rest. All right, Tariq Pascal says, Shaka, which relegation promotion style do you prefer? All three teams in the Prem going down, or in the Bundesliga and also in Ligue 1, where one team gets the chance to keep their spot?
I like that. I like that system a lot. Having the playoff, because sometimes, you know, you finish, what was it, third from top in the Bundesliga or whatever it is, you may not be better prepared than the team that's third bottom. I mean, you could make that same argument for all three of the wanting to be promoted teams and the relegated teams. But I like that system a whole lot more.
Do you like this?
Why don't we get, Kay, a very impartial, unbiased view on this and get our sometimes colleague, Derek Ray, on the phone and ask him who does it better, Germany or England? And then we can all have a bet which way he goes on this.
It'd be an easy bet.
I have a feeling
we'll all win that bet.
We do have Frank LeBoeuf on the show.
Stop taking bets,
bookies. It's the same in France. Do you like the system, Frank?
Yes, I like the system, and I experienced the system because I went up with Strasbourg finishing second in their League 2 and playing against Rennes. We finished 18th, and we had three games to go up and two games with two legs against Rennes. And the last game in Strasbourg, that was, the atmosphere was exceptional. It's tiring because you are at the end of the season, but you have a chance to go up, and Rennes had a chance to not go down. So I think it's interesting. It brings something special to the League One and to the Bundesliga.
All right, last question from Dan the Orange Man. Stevie, how difficult is it for a fullback to play on the opposite side of their stronger foot? Could we actually see Trippier play left back at the Euros?
I can honestly tell you, I didn't find it a problem. You know, you've got to, you kind of look at the positives either way. You know, I guess if you're a right-footed right back playing left back, your tendency is to come inside onto your right foot. But other than that, I don't see there's that much of a difference, to be honest. I couldn't have cared less whether it was right back or left back, put it that way. So, yeah, just the only tendency is to come inside.
Well, I tell you what, if you're a bad fullback, you struggle to play either side. But I think Stevie will appreciate this player. One of the greatest, and I mean fantastic, one of the most fantastic fullbacks of his generation was a right-footed player playing left back for Manchester United, and that was Dennis Irwin. Dennis Irwin was one of the best fullbacks of that generation, bar none. And Dennis was right-footed. So there's your answer. If you're a good enough player,
before,
you can do it.
I thought he was going to say Maldini then, right-footed and left back. Frank, you want
in? And before you are Manuel Amoros, was named the best player in the World Cup, best defender on the left side in the World Cup 82 when he was a right-footed and used to play on the right side.
Mm. What a player, Amoros. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that will do it the latest edition of Extra Time.
Very salty.
Very salty edition. We do have some love salt.
Very salty.
Some love salt versions that you can catch daily.
Yes, TV.
On ESPN Plus.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.